Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I'm an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for a talk cast every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444, and just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, while it still exists, you can also follow me on sfuoncall. Damn. Ow. And if you want to follow my personal account, that's Paul Franz, P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. There's no T in that. And also, if you want to follow my business account, that's Franz Games, F-R-A-N-Z. GMES, of course, is a lovely talk cast. Gets turned to podcast and available on iTunes and various feeds across the net, and obviously also on YouTube and Twitch. Moving on forward, when it comes to news from A to B, there's not much new from A to B this week. Just a reminder, though, that they have plenty of free material on the website, including Cadet training manual. Actually, don't have it on the website, but they have a link to all the e-tailers that have available for free, just for the cost of basically creating an account with them, which means they have their email address, which is, I think, is a small price to pay for something free, especially because it is, guess what, free. And they do have something online, which is on their website, which is a free copy of Federation Commander. That is, it's called First Missions. It's an introduction into Federation Commander itself. So feel free to stop by starfleetgames.com and look for those items. Now, moving on to SFB Online tournaments, in this case, tournament, Sapphire Star 13 tournament, we are down to the finals. It's Kingzilla in the RKR versus the Mad Jack, that's Jack Taylor, in the Hydran, which was interesting that Mad Jack beat Hood, who is was flying the Fed, and I don't know who beat Crash and Burn in the Wax. I forget who that was. I think that was Kingzilla was who won. Moving on to nothing much when it comes to online client stuff. Obviously, a couple of weeks ago, I actually released, got everything out the door for the latest release of the online client. If there's any issues, please tell me. A reminder, there is one change. There is no demo button anymore, so you have to sign up for an account to have a demo, to have a quote-unquote demo account. You just have to create an account, and that's fine. I am going to be changing the website soon. I'm working on it to actually give you a separate sign-up page for just creating a demo account. The idea there is I want to be able to know who's playing, give them, you know, send them an email and say, oh, well, welcome to SFB Online. You know, here's some websites, here's maybe some videos and so forth that you can listen to introduce you into the client and so forth, and basically be a little more helpful, a little more active in trying to encourage people to sign up to SFB Online or FedCom Online. Moving on to the library report, we do have some more cards for FedCom and some more SSDs for the SFB library, but unfortunately I have not had a chance to process them. I will be working on those hopefully this weekend. Not sure, because also I'm going to be spending most of my weekends either at Doug's or SFB or Starfleet Warlord, or also the other thing is I'm going to spend a good part of the day with Franciscans. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we got Barry for a little bit. Doug should be hopefully back. Hold on. Let me check something. I want to check to see if I think he actually got off the phone, which means I'll probably have to get him back in. That's what I'm gonna have to do to have him join. But anyhow, so how you doing? How you doing, Barry?
Exhausted. I think, did I talk to you since I got back from Alaska?
I think a little bit, but not much.
That was a kind of last minute, where I went to my daughter's wedding in Washington State, and Yavi was, after the wedding, she was like, yeah, she wasn't going to be bothered talking to me or her sister or her sister's husband. So her sister's husband, Jamie, said, well, since she's not talking to us, let's go to Alaska since we're already on the West Coast. I'm like, I'm down with that.
That's gonna dry
Took a
out.
lot of fabulous photos. We had a blast. Yeah.
Yeah,
And
I
that
know you
was,
sent me a few of them.
yeah. So the end of March is interesting. It's before, a lot of stuff is still boarded up. There are towns that literally shut, they board up and shut down, board up the towns, literally, from like September through the end of May. So you can't get there. I mean, they don't even have the streets plowed out. They don't even bother. It's like, okay, when the snow melts, and in those areas, it don't melt till end of May. So,
Yeah,
but
listen.
the plus side was, and everything up there is freaking expensive. So, but the Airbnbs are actually dirt cheap. And available because it's their off season. So we got some really nice deals on Airbnbs. That's pretty cool. And there are a few activities that are available at that time of year that are not available during the short summer they have, which is their main tourist season. There was a couple of companies that were advertising and you want to have a sled dog ride? You can get a tour where you're getting pulled on you're on a sled and being pulled by a whole team of dogs. Would have been kind of cool, but we didn't get a chance to do that. We got to spend the night in New York, which was kind of interesting. And it snowed 2 feet during that night. And I don't know if you're familiar with New York. They're no indoor plumbing. So when it snowed 2 feet overnight, it's like every time you had to go pee, it was like, okay, it can snow yellow. Which was an option for me and my son-in-law Jamie, but my daughter, who's 6 months pregnant, well, she was she was a trooper. Yeah, and went got to North Pole, Alaska. Actually called Ken Burnside while I was in North Pole and said, hey, guess where I'm at? Because I know Ken was born and raised in North Pole, Alaska. They have a very nice store up there selling all sorts of Christmassy things.
I bet.
Yeah, well. If you're going to name the town North Pole, Alaska, you're going to be open for tourists, right? That's
You
what
would
you're
think.
doing. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Went to a couple of diners for breakfast and had elk in my omelet.
Cool.
It's a long, long flight.
Mm-hmm.
So from Seattle, Charlotte, it's 4.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
From Seattle to Anchorage is 3.5 hours.
Wow.
A little bit shorter, but not much. Yeah. Seattle is a 2-hour drive from the Canadian border, and we flew 3.5 hours, flew, not drove, flew 3.5 hours north of there. That was Anchorage.
Right.
And then we drove, and it took us a couple of days to drive up to Fairbanks. Now, if you did it in one go, you could do it in 7 hours, but we made a couple of stops along the way.
Oh, understood.
Took us a couple of days. Yeah. And the mountains are spectacular because that main road goes right past Denali, which is over 20,000 foot elevation.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that is taller than the highest peaks in Europe and Africa and Australia. The only two continents that have a higher peak than Denali are South America and Asia.
That makes sense. You got the Himalayas, which are pretty high up there.
Yeah.
In Asia, you know.
Yeah, yeah, the Himalayas. Yeah. But that's it. Outside of Asia and Europe, outside Asia and South America, that is the tallest peak in the world.
Wow.
And we were within 40 miles of it. And it was spectacular. Just spectacular. Now, in the summertime, everything's opened up. But, you know, summertime is a very short period of time. And you want that same Airbnb that we got last minute for cheap. And if you wanted that in, say, July, it's like, nah.
Mm-hmm.
It's booked out 3 years in advance.
Oh, understood. Yeah, my wife is going to the West Coast, when? I forget when it is. I think it's August. In fact, I know it's August. And that's nuts. Because the way she's planning on it is on the way back is she's going to get to near the airport, get a hotel there, and then take an early morning flight, like a 5 a.m. flight.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh gosh!
To fly home from, well, because it was cheaper, you know, than yeah, that she's gonna have to stay for
a red eye.
Yeah, she could have taken a red eye, but I told her, like, my love, no, you're not a person who really is comfortable sleeping on a plane. I can sleep anywhere.
The problem with, yeah, I've slept on planes many times before. The problem with a red eye, with a 5 a.m. flight, is that you need to be, what airport is this?
I don't remember. I think it's like...
What state? What city?
It's California. I think it's San Diego.
San Diego. Okay. I know the airport. I've flown through San Diego Airport. San Diego Airport, you probably want to be at the airport an hour and a half before the flight.
Mm-hmm. I know.
So now you need to be at the airport at 3:30 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
which, depending on how long it takes you to get out of bed, probably waking up at about 2:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Just take the freaking red eye.
I'm not quite sure the thing is, she's going to be coming off this 2-week long retreat. And
yeah,
around noon time, you know, so,
right.
You know, I told her, just find a hotel, just chill out, have a nice dinner. Don't rush it and just, you know, go to bed early and then take the early morning flight. You know,
Oh man, if I do that, I'm gonna take like the 8 or 9 a.m. flight.
Yeah, but there's only two flights out of there.
I don't.
at least.
Well, yeah, but San Diego.
For the airline she wants to take. So.
Which airline is that?
Delta.
Delta. Oh boy, and which means you're connecting through probably Atlanta.
Yep.
Yeah. I've flown out of San Diego or into and out of San Diego a time or three. So The last time I was through that airport was about a year and a half ago.
Understood.
Yeah.
Yes, my wife never.
Now, getting back from Alaska, it was
yeah.
an hour flight from Fairbanks to Anchorage and a 3.5 hour flight to Seattle. Then a 4.5 hour flight to Charlotte, and then an hour flight to BWI. Sometimes there were 3 or 4 hour layovers. Took 2 days. I left Fairbanks one day, and I got home late the next night. But I did get to spend a night in Anchorage on that trip home. And I'm about to pass out, so okay. I'm going to call it a night, guys. Sorry to, yeah.
That's okay. That's fine.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, I'll
holler
sometime.
Okay, well, he's not gone. Okay. So how you doing, Doug?
Yeah. I am here.
That's good.
Spring is also apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Spring has sprung down here in Harrisburg.
Oh, over here in Reading, it's the same thing. Had to set up the air conditioner for my daughter last night, which was fun because I had to go downstairs, go to the basement, drag it all the way up to the two flights of stairs, and then set it up, put the screws in the windows and so forth to hold it steady and so forth. Because. My daughter doesn't like getting a little warm. As is, I don't have. That's her room is the only air conditioner in the house that's currently running. My wife and I don't have air conditioner running in our room. We don't have the air conditioner running down here. So, it's inside the house is like 81 degrees, but it's not too bad. Yeah, Dave, it does work. But anyway. Yeah, when it comes to your issue with using TalkShoe, I'll have to figure that out.
It was saying I had a browser issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just have to, screw around with that.
Yeah, what browser are you using?
Firefox.
Okay. Do you have next time try a Chrome browser, Chromium based browser like Brave or Chrome itself, or Vivaldi, or what else is there, Edge. You know, because last time I checked with TalkShoe is really really picky about the browser. Now it's been a while. It's been quite a few years now since. They did the major switch, and when they did the major switch into the new interface and all that kind of thing, that it broke all the rest of the browsers except for Chrome. It's like Internet Explorer in the 90s, you know, where Internet Explorer if your website had to work with Internet Explorer, if it worked with any other browser, that was fine, but the main one was Internet Explorer. Boom.
Well, the thing is, I was hearing you guys And you weren't hearing me on the...
Well, it's because I can't unmute you. Every time I try to unmute you, it fails. Now, it might be something... I'm assuming that you got notified that, oh, are you going to allow them to, allow the use of the camera and the microphone, at least the microphone for you, because I know you don't have a camera on that computer. You got prompted for that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we'll figure it. Right, say that again?
You got prompted to say, okay, will you allow them to use your microphone?
Actually, I did not.
Okay, then if I were you, I would check Firefox and make sure you don't have
that. We can check it. We can look at it.
Yeah.
We can work on it Saturday if you want.
Yeah, yeah. Because let me see, privacy, security. I'm just gonna look at that for a moment.
You'll be like sitting right here,
right? Oh,
like have everything.
Understood. I'm just gonna look at this for a moment. Right, settings. Yeah, you can. There's the one that you can say block new requests for access. For if that's enabled in the preferences, then that will never prompt you. So it might be that. But anyhow, getting to our topic for this evening, even though it's like half an hour's already gone. Well, not quite half an hour, 20 minutes. What I was thinking about for a topic for this evening was basically given the environment, that's the best way, gaming environment today. The question I have is, SFB or even Federation Commander, is it too complicated for today's gamers? Do they look at the rule book and go, I'll pass. SFB itself, I think, Doug, you will agree, has a lot of rules. If you boil it down, yes, it's not that many, but for a beginner, unless you have someone sitting there by your side saying, let's just go through the basics, bum, 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 bum. Going through the basics might take, half an hour, to start with, and then you have to start learning about, how to do energy allocation and all that kind of thing. But the question
is...
Okay, go.
I think there's definitely a bit of culture shock with it. Mm-hmm. Because, most people aren't used to that particular depth of gaming stuff. And before I got into SFB, I was quite familiar with war games in general. I was an old SPI player as well.
Right.
So I think the problem for a, quote, newer generation is just simply what are they used to? And it's not SFB. And a lot of the people who played the game that we met on a regular basis over the decades, they're attracted to it for different reasons and different ways. But there also is a tendency for them to be drawn from a group that is quite okay with dealing with voluminous amounts of information.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking, look at what we were just talking with Barry. Barry's an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you have that level of intellect and willingness to put the patience to put the time into it, that's not where a lot of people are coming from. It's part of why it was always, even way back in the day, kind of a one percenter thing of the gaming industry.
True. True.
They're the SFB players, one percenters of the one percenters in respects. And the only more 1% than that would be some of the people who do, some of the mega game style, humongous old war games where it would take like two or three tables to set up, and you're playing World War II on a battalion scale or something like that.
Right, right, which is crazy.
Rules.
But
which is crazy, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, in that case, the big thing is they, especially for, what's that one YouTube channel that we were looking at, the Napoleonic War?
Oh, no, you were thinking of the gaming group down in York, the
right.
Miniatures Gaming Group.
Right.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Excuse me, Kate.
And the name is just evading me at the moment. Little Wars TV.
Yeah.
Those guys.
Right.
You're talking about, in their genre, you have people that are very deeply into the historical stuff, and they're quite willing to play with complex rule sets and so on and so on.
And,
of course, genres, ages, eras, everything else.
Right.
SFB, though, even breaking it down into the more modern sense of games, look at what the competition is now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of the games that you're competing with are just nowhere near as complex.
Mm-hmm.
And and a lot of people just don't want to spend the time doing that.
Oh, understood.
The vast majority, yeah. Unless it just really piques their interest for whatever reason.
Right. And that can happen, especially given, good grief, was it, okay, this, did, does, I forget who it is. Whether it was, who owns Star Trek, the IP is, yes, it's still Paramount. And they've been definitely, as of late, been very open about adding new TV shows, using that to expand their IP, the usage of their IP, and expanding that and bringing in interest into Star Trek, which is, and you think about it, is a very old sci-fi universe. It's from back in the 60s. You know, 1960s, not 1860s. It's not that old. So that's a help there, and that could be a hook to capture some of those people. Obviously, as you pointed out, that the complexity of the game, the detail of it, because when SFB came out, yes, it was complex. It was kind of a one percenter game for the most part. But maybe not 1%. I'm going to maybe give it a 10%. And the only reason I say that is because of in that day and age, we didn't have complex computer games. In some cases, we didn't even have computer games when it first came out, because SFB came out, 1975? Is that? It was somewhere in the 70s.
It was way back.
Yeah, it's way back. I agree there. But
way back, man.
Yeah. Oh, understood. And given that, you know, there were no computers, and therefore, when people wanted to simulate kind of realism, you didn't think about a computer. The idea is you write, when it comes to board games, you would write up a game, you'd write up the rules, you have it so that, you know, it wasn't too bogged down in the details, though I'm sure there are games that came out that were too bogged down in details, and so they failed. You know, that some people even like, I'm sure there's those really one percenters who liked even the complexity, and they liked all the details to the such a degree that even though it seemed like the complexity and the detail was so much, they loved that. That level of detail. And that was the one great thing about SFB when it came out. And it's still one of those, I think, one of those great benefits for SFB is the detail. You know, obviously when it first came out, way back in the day, when It came in a little booklet like this big. It's, you know, what, like a 4x6, no, maybe not, like 6x8, you know, little rule book, maybe 10 pages long for the original. This is the original. This is when there weren't that many empires. You know, you had your Klingon, you have your Federation. I think Romulan was part of expansion. You know, I think it was expansion 1, 2, and 3. Am I got that right, Doug? Do you remember?
Oh yeah, 1, 2, 3. You're
okay.
On there.
Okay, cool.
There were several expansions.
Right, and then they
grew a lot.
Mm-hmm. And then they expanded and so forth. And of course, then we had the great tournament kind of revolution, where people would come to conventions, and we have these gaming conventions where people would come from all over the country. Now, this, remember, this is still pre-internet age. So people aren't communicating over the internet. The way people got together and played is that you would either go to a local con or a national convention. You know, this is when things start really ramping up when it comes to that. And that's when we had the issue that Steve Cole had, the issue when they're running tournaments, that of course the rules, they found out that people were interpreting the rules different ways. And then of course Steve Cole went, you know, we can't have this. He would explain, this is the way the rules are supposed to be, you know, this is the rule, this is how it works. You know, and then people go, oh. So what happened is, of course, that's why SFP started growing in size, the number of details in the rules for specifying the different interactions and so forth, because of that issue of people trying to understand the rules and not really understanding the rules correctly. That's the way Steve Cole wanted them to know it. So that he had to write more, he had to write that more detail, which anyone who's been playing SFB long enough, the details, do we actually memorize all the details? No, we don't. What we do when it comes to the details is that every once in a while, you'll see us pop out the rule book, either the paper copy or hopefully an ebook copy, because the ebook copy in my mind is always the best thing when it comes to searching for things. You can actually search for a rule, and then you can search for, okay, it's in my mind, it's a lot easier to handle. Of course, before ebook copies, we had to do it by hand, and then of course we had the errata that got published and sent out. Oh, that was always fun part about that. These days you can do it, if you do an ebook form, you can actually update the ebook to have the corrections, which are the most egregious, because obviously anyone who creates a product, they don't want to go back and edit it for a second or third or fourth, fifth time, you know, because you're not producing more products, you're just supporting the old product. Now, do you have to support the old product? Yes, you do. But, you know, you don't want to waste your time supporting the older product and have no new product to sell, you know. But, that's the reason why I asked the question, is the level of detail when it comes to modern gamers and whether they'd be interested in it. And more importantly, of course, I think my view is skewed because, you know, as of how long has it been since I went to Origins? You know, or any major convention, you know, Origins or what's the one in Indianapolis? Gen Con.
Gen Con, yeah.
Yeah. And seen other board games, you know, because the only time I go to, the Gamers of Winter, Gamers of Summer, the genre of the game is pretty limited, you know. People aren't playing tactical board games. Now, at Origins or Gen Con, you have people playing tactical board games. In some cases, they're...
It's a niche,
Go, Doug.
Niche thing. It is a niche thing. It is a thing that appeals to a small percentage of the population. No, I mean, it literally is. And that's something that you have to kind of accept. If I made a new online MMORPG setup tomorrow, that would still be a very niche thing online.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to accept that I'm not going to get a million people overnight to do it. I'd be happy to get a few hundred in them. But SFB is literally it's part of a genre that is extremely small within the overall gaming community. So, you know, take that for what you will.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's not a bad thing necessarily. It does make for a very loyal player base, but it's a very small loyal player base. So
that is true.
And you know, I've been trying for years to generate some kind of interest to come out to Gamers of Winter, Gamers of Summer, do an event for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen how that goes over the years.
Yeah.
The days of Origins are way, way past. Those glory days are kind of gone right now.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
And
yeah,
what you would really have to do, let me finish this.
Okay.
If you really want to see that sort of thing come back, what you would really need to do, in my personal opinion, would be to rebuild it from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
Totally, 100%.
Yeah, of course you would.
Rebuild it.
Well, you mean rebuild the player base or rebuild the game?
Game itself.
That's
what you and I know is evolutionary process,
right,
of this game becoming a big deal, and how it evolved from one little book to basically the Commander's Edition. The time frame it took to do that. How many times did we hear Steve Cole say, "We're putting out a new edition here, and we won't have any errata"? Okay.
He
yeah.
didn't say that often, because there was only not really, because how many different editions did he have?
Several.
We had four editions. We had the initial, then we had the designer's edition, then we had the commander's edition, and then we had the captain's edition. After the captain's edition, there's no more editions.
Right. But we have but what you have there is it's literally kind of like, if you want something that people will sit down and play, you know, FedCom comes a little closer to getting it into a modern generation, where a lot of the bookkeeping part of it
mm-hmm.
goes away.
Agreed.
And remember that when this all started out, it was kind of a first for itself. It wasn't the only thing that hit that genre. It wasn't the only thing that hit the concept of being in space or tactical space battles, but it was unique in its own way
mm-hmm.
and new for its time.
Right.
That newness has passed.
Yeah, and Doug, I think
you have.
What? Yeah, the one thing I was going to mention is that I, as pointed out, you know, when it comes to the genres, when SFB originally came out, the tactical board game was a larger chunk of the board gaming scene. You know, you had your tactical board games and you had your more, you know, normal board games like Monopoly or whatever, where you actually placed had pieces on the board, you know, and then at one point what happened, we had Magic the Gathering, you know, the whole idea of card, collectible card games, just card games itself. You know, card games initially was a very small portion of the gaming market. You know, and then Magic the Gathering came and it wiped out a lot of the board games, because everyone wanted Magic the Gathering. It was, you know, they could buy Magic the Gathering a deck relatively cheap compared to it might cost $60, you know, $50 to $60. Now this is back in the day, you know.
The thing about this is Magic the Gathering is very abusive, though. You have that initial cheap little purchase,
right?
But then it gets expensive.
I agree, and that's why the competition was rife with competitors saying, "Hey, we're going to be the next Magic the Gathering," and that's why some of the local game store went out of business, because they bought all these different collector card games and they weren't selling, even though they believed all the hype, saying, "Oh, this is going to be the next Magic the Gathering," which is not Magic the Gathering, you know.
Actually, there's a reason a lot of these places went out of business. Number one thing is changing business models over time. I watched the ones that succeeded and stayed around for the longest time were the ones that adopted a let's rent some tables out kind of thing and became mini venues on top of selling games. That's a whole hour or 10 of topic there by itself. But are you trying to get at, like, how do you recreate the lightning in a bottle aspect of that? How do you play off of that? I mean,
no,
there's, you know, SFP versus Magic the Gathering, it's literally apples and oranges comparison.
Understood.
I'm talking about mechanics.
No, I'm just talking about the history of gaming itself. Because of we had at the very beginning of time when dinosaurs roamed the earth. Maybe not quite that far back, but you get the picture. There were the number of genres wasn't that many. You know, you had your kind of regular board games. Of course, you had card games. You know, the normal 52 card game deck. You had Pinochle. Those are the standard fare. And then came the board game industry where it actually created board games like Life, Monopoly, things like that. And then that was the pedestrian games. And then you moved upward to other gaming. Games.
There's whole series out there that you can watch that give you the history of gaming and board gaming and everything else.
Understood. I'm not trying to repeat. You know, give the history here, but I just want to give an idea of the context of SFB and Federation Commander, and given that environment, then how they could actually thrive versus possibly today, which is people, at least the way I feel about it, is that when it comes to tactical board games, they expect it to be done on the computer, all the rules be done on the computer, and a lot of things being automated for them versus playing a tactical board game on a physical board. You know, moving counters on the board, you know, and then marking down, okay, your damage on your ships. You know, I think, at least to me, that seems like the expectation. But of course, I might have a skewed sense here. Because as I said, most of my physical board gaming experience is from Gamers of Winter, Games of Summer, which is tactical board games. And in that place, that's a rare thing. You know, there's more of Euro games. You know, those kind of European style games. Are more like what that group mainly focused on. You know, still had the Dungeons and Dragons people. They're doing their thing, but everything else was pretty much your games for the most part. You know, Barry and I would play a tactical board game. You know, SFB or Federation Commander. You know, and every once in a while I have a demo of like Starfleet Marines. You know, which was a rare thing.
Gamers thing is actually kind of a microcosm, I mean, of the gaming industry, outside of computer games. And, you know, SFB was an attempt to simulate where you had to do all the paperwork yourself.
Right.
You had to do all the mechanics. You had to do the energy allocation and the movement allocation and this, that, and the other. Manually do every impulse as you're moving through the map. You know, all that. But when you're talking about in context of gamers, it has different genres of games. And like you're saying, the popular sets are, you know, D&D. That's third to half of the people that come in.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Euro game style of games, of not necessarily the old Grognard war games, is the next largest section. Because they're easy to learn.
Right. Oh,
easy to grasp. And sometimes hard to master.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Puerto Rico. You could sit down and learn that in 10 minutes. Literally. 10 minutes or less, how to play it. And then there's so much variation in it that, you know, it can take, you know, years. You can get years of enjoyment out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But SFP, it's a niche thing, and it's a niche thing for a reason. Same thing with FedCom. Though FedCom alleviates some of those things, it doesn't get rid of all of them. It doesn't dump the complexity issue of it. So, yeah, I mean, going forward, I think that if you really wanted to get the SFP thing popular to a new generation of gamers, you'd really have to redesign the game completely.
Well, Doug, the problem with that is that then it wouldn't be SFP.
The problem
with
it is nobody wants to learn it.
Yeah. Well, Doug. Okay. That's
the people
Doug.
That are learning are the ones.
Understood. But we have to go. We have to go back though. Here, because here is the gotcha of the, and that is how when it comes to the genre of tactical board games where you have hexes where you're moving around and you're doing this at the tactical scale. I'm not talking about like F&E where it is a strategic scale, which I would think is a little more popular. You could obviously trim that down and simplify it and so forth. But are those still do people still have an interest in playing those kind of games? This start the basics here, you know.
I'd say there's a yes and no to that. Down to it being a very niche interest.
Oh, understood. I understand.
Majority of people.
Okay, go.
They have, if they have gaming involved in their life, they have, it's usually something else that's simpler and not as complex.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. But
they do the same to the day that they did 20 years ago, which is go out to those venues where they can find people of like mind.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you trying to go with this whole thing? A way to rebuild the SFP player base?
No, I'm not. The key question here is, can a game like SFB, whatever you want to call it, can it thrive in at least in a small community in this current environment, where the idea of having a tactical board game that you can, that people will be interested in and actually play it. Now, this is not historical. This is sci-fi or this is a futuristic. That kind of genre. I'm not talking about historical here. Because historical, that's a totally different genre in that people like to replay the great battles of the past. And Lord knows they will discuss in infinitum the history of this battle, and what actually happened, and possibly having a simulation of what happened, what would happen, or of course the whole what if scenarios of the past, what happened if this the reinforcements showed up in time instead of being late, or they actually had good soldiers versus slaves or whatever. I don't know that much about historical battles.
You're going off on a little tangent there. The thing is this: the board gaming, tactical board gaming, of the SFB variety. I think the question is answering itself, because we're not seeing a lot of people come in to try it at Gamers, for instance, who aren't already involved in it, who have not been involved. They've already been involved in it for a significant amount of time prior.
Mm-hmm.
And look, the competition for it is, there is computer games are huge. Console games are absolutely a monster huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
If Steve Cole had the funds and the willingness to do a national advertising campaign and actually put a huge budget out there of getting the word out about, hey, here's the latest edition, here's the last edition of Starfleet Battles, here's the last edition of Fed Commander. And he did some kind of advertising that hits the general public instead of, it's maybe a game that you might see in a game store if you can find a game store. And it's maybe something you might see at small convention or a large convention if somebody shows up to run it and other people show up to play it in significant numbers. He might actually net a bunch of people that will try it, and out of that bunch of people that would try it, some people will stick with it and a lot of people won't. He used to advertise way back in the day, but that was mostly like in magazines that were already in the gamer community.
Right, because that's the target audience. This is not for General Joe Schmo.
Well, the thing is, if you exclude General Joe Schmo, then how do you expect it to grow out into that audience? I mean, General Joe Schmo, the audience out there, they know D&D because it's on Stranger Things.
Right.
They know Settlers of Catan because it was on Big Bang Theory. Niche things, that things that we don't consider niche within the gaming community because they're popular, are actually rather niche things to the general public. So if you want to see another generation of people have an interest in SFB, then you have to either evangelize it a lot yourself, like every time you meet somebody, say, hi, let's play SFB, to like every single person you meet, or, you know, the company that owns it needs to go out there and throw some advertising into places where it would, you know, have some chance of taking root. Mm-hmm. It's like that old proverb. I don't remember it word for word, but, you know, the thing about, like, being evangelical, so to speak. You know, you throw your seeds here, you throw your seeds there, and if you throw the seeds into places where they're not going to grow, then, you know, it's not going to work. But, that's a bad tangent, sorry.
That's fine.
The thing is, SFB was a niche thing amongst the niche people.
Mm-hmm.
And to un-niche it, it has to be put out to a larger audience.
Yeah, well, again.
Generate.
Oh, understood. That if you want SFB to grow in a tremendous fashion, but I don't think SFB will ever grow in a tremendous fashion without basically gutting it and saying, oh, this is SFB, and then all the previous gamers going, oh, no, it's not. This is not SFB. You know, which is why you have to create a new game, which Federation Commander goes to a point. It's this close to being the beer and pretzels game that you're looking for. You know, the closest one to a Brill and Pretzels game that currently ADB offers is Starfleet Battle Force. You know, the card game. That's the closest thing to a beer and pretzels game that they currently have. Because no die, it's just cards. It's not that complicated. Now, it's, you know, to me, that game is good for 2 to 4 players, and that's about it. And unfortunately, that there was the flaw in the game design of that was just the way the cards work. You know, it works fine if you just have that one deck. But if trying to expand it, which I know the whole idea of it to begin with was that, okay, you need this card deck and that's it. You don't need to get any expansions. But there was no way to add expansions. it was the issue later on, is if you want to add other empires, you want to add the Lyrans, you want to add Hydrans, you want to add these other things, all of a sudden, what, you know, when it comes to, you have to add those weapons into the card deck, which then at that point it waters down the card deck, so you have even less chance of actually getting a card that has your weapon in it, you know. So that to me, that was one of those things that I don't think ADB thought about, which was the idea of adding cards. Maybe not a whole another deck that you can add to it, but the whole idea of adding new cards, new empires. You know, not to sell more. You know, the same. Not to sell more decks of a product, but to have it so that it wasn't. It was alive, you know. That's one of the things that was with SFB itself, was that, you know, for many, many, many years, ADB was always producing modules, you know, expansions that you actually could have. So you have new ships. You know, obviously you have the different empires, and we still had those for many, many, many years. We had new empires, whether they were from, you know, a new part of the Milky Way galaxy or from a different galaxy all itself. You know, I understand that those weren't nearly as popular, but it was a way to expand what was what was defined as being SFB. So the what you have to do is take it down to another notch. In other words, boil it down a little bit more, make it a little bit easier. Because the one thing I've said this in the past, which is the whole thing with the FedCom, the original idea of a FedCom was an awesome idea. And the one thing that was the gotcha of Federation Commander is when they had to add in multi-turn army weapons. That's when it killed it. I'm not saying that it's not a popular game, because it is popular in its own sense. But it added that other part of complexity, which is okay if you're thinking about it as SFB light, but not to the point of almost beer and pretzels, you know, or have it so it's really easy to pick up, you know. At least that's the way I see it. So if we want to bring back a new game from, yeah, to a certain degree, Chris is saying that Stormata SFU is closer to a beer and pretzels game than a FedCom, and I tend to agree with that statement. The big issue with Stormata SFU is, look at the thickness of the rulebook. Create a rulebook which is the size of the original SFB game. That's the size that you want to give people. You know, I've not looked at their games lately for a while, which is the company Cheap Ass Games. You know.
Oh my God.
So, it I think, you know, great, the whole idea, it was make it very cheap and expensive games that people could play, you know. But then, of course, we come back to, again, the original question which I had, which is, can a non-computer-based game that's a tactical board game actually have an audience in this current gaming environment?
Yeah, absolutely. There's people out there that will play games.
Tactical board
games. And we prove it every time. Every time, every single time that we have gamers, people are out there playing board games.
Yeah, I didn't say they weren't, but the board games, because, but all those board, have you, I'm sure you looked at the board games. And they're all, okay, you have tracks, or you have the different places where then you can go from this place to this place, but it's not tactical. You know, you don't have people bring up what's the Civil War game you really like? which basically is a tactical board game, where you have soldiers moving around the field, you know, in this case, they're represented by counters, you know, on this Civil War battlefield. Do you see anyone playing that? No.
And that's we don't see that at the game.
Right.
May see more of that at, like, Origins or something.
Right.
Like that.
Which is why I brought up that issue, you know, earlier, which is, I'm not sure if my view on things is slighted. You know, not slighted. That's not the word I'm looking for. Skewed. Yeah, that's better. More of a term I was looking for. Skewed. In that.
Biased.
What?
Biased.
Higher.
But skewed
by. Biased. Biased. Yes. Yeah, I agree. That's actually a better term, biased, because of my limited personal experience, which most of it, you know, as I said, I don't go to, I don't go to Origins anymore. I don't go. I've never gone to Gen Con. I haven't gone even to PAX down in Philadelphia. And so I don't have experience with a larger gaming community. So it's possible that, you know, I'm missing all those people and going, yeah, there's still a vibrant tactical board game community, you know, because currently, as I said, you know,
Board Game Geek is an excellent example to find people, find games.
True.
But I think overall it's a very grading community. I don't mean just SFB. You talk about tactical kind of games like that, like, say, if you're talking about, like, oh, Terrible Swift Sword, Lima Bayonet, the old hexagon-based systems that, you know, you're running around in a very tactical sense, going pew-pews with, you know, regardless of whether it's tanks, Civil War infantry battalions, or starships, that is that's a graying community.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I understand.
That's something that's actually an issue for the miniatures wargaming community as well.
Mm-hmm.
But in the miniatures wargaming community, there is a little bit of a resurgence with games that are more modern. And I wouldn't say less Grognardy than some of the older ones, but where the rules are a lot simpler. They're broken down into a simpler game. And I think if you really wanted to grow an SFB thing, well, maybe it could be done. But like I said, you would have to basically put out a new generation of games.
Mm-hmm.
Do that. That was actually something that I remember from one of the videos for Little Wars TV. They specifically addressed the issue of the graying Grognard community. I mean, the guys who will participate because it's both a hobby. The miniatures wargaming thing at one point was basically both a hobby and a gaming endeavor. And it was hobbyist in the sense of you literally painted all your armies. You built all your terrain. You built all the things that went on your terrain. And, you know, gaming in the sense of learning the complex rules and so forth and so on. But a lot of the guys that got hooked into that back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, they're getting old, and not all of their descendants are picking it up.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people coming into the games from a younger generation that are coming in for games that aren't necessarily the older games that those guys played, but are a newer game that, you know, not necessarily one-page rules, but not 90-page rules. And where the mechanics have been significantly refined. Because that's an issue with SFB. And it's actually something that I'm looking at doing with, this is something we can talk about Saturday in private, is with the game engine thing that I'm looking at doing, is it's a way of simplifying and refining everything down to a few mechanics for any genre you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the SFB, you're talking about cross-referencing rules and ways to Sunday. You're talking about, you know, all these different charts, which are conveniently put into the SSD for the most part.
Right.
But it's still like 100 different things.
Yeah, but
that you have to learn to use.
Right, but the great thing about charts is that they're simple. You know,
yeah,
simple to understand.
Saying, what I'm saying is there's a huge complexity issue still.
Mm-hmm.
And it's intimidating to people that would come into it. And a lot of people say, we'll look at that and say it's a huge time sink just to get started. I mean, when I introduced people to playing SFB back in the day when I was in the military, I did it a lot. You know, I literally didn't say, here's the rules, go learn them. I sat them down and just spoon-fed them how to play, how the mechanics worked, you know, how the movement thing worked, how to do your SSD, you know, all that stuff. And it was a much better experience for those guys than, blam, here's a book, figure it all out.
Right, right. Oh, understood. Yeah, because that's the best way of learning anyway. I mean, any game, it doesn't matter what game it is, whether it's a tactical board game, a Euro game, a card game, is to sit down with somebody and teach them the game. Someone who knows the rules, teaching someone else who doesn't know the rules.
So there's that.
So, you know, the key there, obviously, is having somebody that's passionate about the game, that loves playing the game, and wants to teach it to others, basically be an evangelist, you know, which is the whole definition of evangelist is telling the good news, in this case, the good news of this great game that we know about.
Well, another thing is, you know, if say, you wanted to see an SFB community grow, The easiest way to see it grow is to get it into Walmart. You can go into Walmart and find some war games, not very many, but you'll find games in Walmart. If SFB was in a national chain like Walmart,
mm-hmm.
on the shelf, you know, there would be people will buy it just because it has the, you know, the Star Trek look. Other people will look at it on their cell phone, do a little research, and they'll walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Yeah, well,
hard to say.
Yeah, well, in that case,
but I would say that if you wanted to see,
the biggest
thing is this: it's a matter of adapting to the time. And if you wanted to see any kind of gaming grow, it has to reach out to the target community. And it has to be viable and competitive with all the other things that are there to take up people's time.
Mm-hmm. Understood. But again, the only thing I was going to mention about the whole Walmart thing, the problem with that is that when you get into Walmart, now you're competing against the $20 game. And if people say, saying, why am I paying $80 for this game? You know?
Well, the other side of that whole thing is like, you know, it's like, why in the early 1980s did I pay $25, which was a big money for a game back then, or a Gleam of Bayonets or a Terrible Swift Sword? And, you know, and the explanation to my other army buddies was, look, you're going to spend that on a night of drinking on Friday and it's all gone. I'm going to set this game up and play it for the whole weekend. And then, you know, maybe the next weekend I'll do it. Maybe the weekend after that. You know, I'll get hundreds of hours of game time out of this, and it'll be pennies an hour overall for my time spent enjoying this versus what you spend on one night of drinking.
Right. Understood.
But that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, that's target audience.
But the issue of competing with the $20 game for an $80 game, that's just a logistics issue. That's a marketing issue. If you're getting that kind of bulk to go into Walmart, he should be able to get a better production deal for the volume where the price can go down a bit to be more competitive. That's a whole other issue. And the simple fact is it comes down to exposure. That game doesn't get the exposure. If you walked into a mall, just did a survey, just asked people, have you heard of Game X? You know, and everybody's going to know D&D. Or the vast majority will know D&D. The vast majority may know some Euro games. You know, they may know some games from popular TV shows. They'll all know stuff like Monopoly, things that they see in Walmart that they got for their birthday or Christmas or whatever. You know, they'll know those common core kind of stuff. But Starfleet Battle, the vast majority of them are going to look at you like, and what the hell is that? And yeah, or even if you talk to them about wargaming, like, you know, Napoleonic Wars, or American Civil War games, or, you know, insert Avalon Hills game line, or Squad Leader, or whatever game you want to throw in there, most people don't know about them. So, because they're not exposed to them.
Understood.
That's kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to get competition with the computer games that proliferate in today's age, with everybody having the internet connection, you know, you're talking about a massive kind of task.
Agreed.
It would take significant advertising.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So, on the other hand, who knows? There may be a resurgence in it. I mean, just look at poker. Okay? Poker has gone through, like, these waves of popularity over hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's an upswing and a downswing in it. And, you know, right now it's on a downswing because of COVID a few years ago, killing literally an entire industry, practically. And there will be an upswing to that sometime. That's a whole other topic.
Yeah, agreed.
So, short answer? Yeah, short answer? I don't know.
Yep.
Maybe not.
Yep, agreed. Okay, well, with that...
I think the way to think back on it might be kind of like, how did you get into it way back in the day? How would you expect somebody else to get into it way back, you know, in the future then?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are inundated with ads for literally, you know, all sorts of computer games. And, you know, it's like you browse YouTube for an hour or so, you know, depending on your interest, you're going to get hit with, you know, cell phone game after cell phone game, you're going to get hit with, you know, all sorts of different stuff. But are you going to get hit with an ad for Starfleet Battles? No. Not. And the people aren't being told about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
Understood.
Because having it on somebody's, you know, gathering dust on somebody's shelf isn't going to cut it. That.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, with that, we're going to have to shut it down because that is like, probably should have stopped like 10 minutes ago. But anyhow.
Oh, yeah. Where are we past normal?
Yeah. Come on. I got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. So, really.
Good luck.
Yeah. I still got to put everything together
for this
night. Okay. Well, you have a good night, Doug.
Hey, on a more positive note, I am definitely thinking about doing another fundraiser, rethinking it of a different way to see about doing Gamers of Summer and Winter.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't made my mind up yet about it.
So, okay.
Yay. There you go.
Yay. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Okay, welcome. Okay. Good night. So, nice discussion about, is S&P too complex, or even FedCom too complex to be successful in this day and age? Well, we don't know. There's still interest there for S&P. There's still interest there for Federation Commander. That I know from the Reddit, so subreddit that we have for SFB. We actually had someone just asking about the SFB. Of course, we have the Starfleet Battles Facebook group. We have, of course, Federation Commander Facebook group and the SFB Online Facebook group. You know, these kind of things. And you see people interested in this and posting about it from all over the place. Now, how many of these people are playing it? Don't know. There are, you know, obviously there's some people playing it because of, I see people posting their games on Facebook, which is always awesome to see. And I hope that, you know, we'll see more and more of that as time goes on. And the key there, obviously, is the people who are extroverts, you know, people not like me. Believe it or not, I'm not an extrovert. I'm pretty much an introvert, and I've overcome some of that overall, but I still have my issue. But anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.